Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. This is going to be an empowering hour. Lots of information on how to live a longer and healthier life. We're going to talk about your red blood cells, also what happens with high doses of vitamin B1. Strawberries. They do what? Yeah, and Korean ginseng also. Curcumin, even more good stuff today on it. Coenzyme Q10 in one major disease. It can help alleviate it. And boomers are looking at alternative arthritis treatments, according to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. We'll get into all that and a lot more on health and healing. Then from our environmental movement, well, kind of says it all when you turn on the television and it says, catastrophic weather heading for certain areas on the East Coast. And then you look in the New York Times on the second page and it has, British politicians blame one another for regional flooding. And it has a photograph of thousands of homes being flooded. Then you see the Thames River is overflowing at the highest level in 285 years. What does this mean? Is this one of these one-off situations? We'll talk about that. Also today, from Public Health, why is the CDC and the FDA still recommending the failed whooping cough vaccine? Also, if your person wants to grow your own food organically, you're against GMOs, the government now is saying that you are an extremist. That means you could be labeled as a terrorist. Think not? Well, think again. From our continuing series on fascism in America, how we're becoming a police state, we will give you the facts. Don't believe everything you read about flu deaths. I'll give you the reasons why on that. My guest in the second part of our program is Stephen Kinzer. He's a veteran correspondent with the New York Times. He's reported from over 50 countries. And he is going to talk about two brothers many of you have never heard of, the Dulles brothers. These two people, more than any other brothers, have shaped American foreign policy that has led to the world detesting the United States. These people are as close to pure evil as you could get. We're going to explain who they were, how they did it, and what it's meant for us today. Prelude to a crash. Do I believe that we're going to have a crash? You bet. It is inevitable. Absolutely inevitable. Why? What are the signs of this? Margin debt? What's margin debt? Remember back in your history from the Great Depression, a lot of Americans didn't have to buy something at 100%. They could buy it on margin, meaning that you could give a little down and buy some stock. And then when the stock went up, you would cash them in and pay for the stock that you had bought with the gains you had made. But I thought we outlawed that. For a time we did, but today, margin debt is big. How big? Well, the biggest in history. $445 billion as of today in stock. Well, the average person can't get any margin. No. These are the big players. So it's all based upon creating an artificial bubble. All bubbles burst. I'll go into that. So we have a lot to share. And I want to thank you all and all of our affiliates for tuning in. Let's begin. We know that we need healthy red blood cells, and they should be spaced. They shouldn't clump together. When they clump together or aggregate, that is what can cause a clot. And a clot on an airplane can lead to thrombosis, and you end up having a blockage, and you could die. That's why on a plane, every hour, you should get up and walking up and down the aisle. You should get at the end of the plane, back now where the bathrooms are, and just do some slight squats. Go down about, you know, maybe 6 inches back up. And then even when you're in your seat, you shouldn't allow your legs to be bent all the time. You should try to keep your legs out a little straighter. And about every 20 minutes, just move your toes forward. Take your shoes off, move them back, forward, back, forward. In other words, you want the muscles to constrict and relax, constrict and relax, because it keeps the blood flowing. Visualize this. Visualize when you sit, you're bending the veins so that there is a kind of like a grabbing a water hose and just twisting it. So you're not getting good blood flow. Not good. So that's one thing you can do, but also you can make sure that you have a higher level of antioxidants, garlic capsules, vitamin C, vitamin E, coenzyme Q10, alpha-lipoic acid. Those five nutrients help thin the blood, allow for healthier blood flow. There's also something else they do. Quote, higher red blood cell EPA and DHA, that's your omega-3 fatty acids, correspond with larger total brain and hippocampal volumes. This is from the Sanford School of Medicine, University of South Dakota, and they're saying, get your DHA. They looked at 1,100 postmenopausal women from the Women's Health Initiative memory study, and they found that those who had DHA, or the omega-3 fatty acids, every day, you actually had larger brain volume, especially that that controls cognition and memory. One more reason to eat your avocados, sunflower seeds, have flax seeds, have your oils. High doses of vitamin B1 reduces the proliferation in cancer cell lines, and that's important. This was done at the Department of Pharmaceutical and Biomedical Sciences, College of Pharmacy, University of Georgia. And what it means is this. In a cell culture study involving pancreatic cancer cells, high doses of thiamine, which is vitamin B1, was found to reduce cell cancer proliferation. That means it helps prevent it from spreading. I'm going to suggest 100 milligrams. So if you have cancer, pay attention to vitamin B1. Strawberries. More good news on that. Strawberry consumption may ameliorate cardiovascular risk, heart disease. Quote, 1 month strawberry-rich anthocyanin in supplementation ameliorates cardiovascular risks, oxidative stress markers, and platelet activation in humans. That's the study. And that was from a major study in Italy. In the study, they involving healthy volunteers, they took 500 grams per day of strawberries and rich in vitamin C and anthocyanins. It's not the vitamin C, it's the anthocyanins. They did this for 1 month, and they found it was associated with a definite benefit in the lipid profile and the anti-hemolytic defenses and platelet function. Specifically, the more strawberries consumed, the greater reduction in total cholesterol, the bad LDL cholesterol, and triglycerides. That meant that you're less likely to have a heart problem. So, those of you who are taking your strawberries, you're protecting yourself from heart disease. I know some of you are getting your strawberries in high amounts, that's for sure. So, because you're getting your red powders, and those are rich, rich, rich in strawberries, but eat organic strawberries. By the way, don't eat non-organic strawberries because they're heavily sprayed. Korean red ginseng. It improves glucose control in patients with impaired fasting glucose, and especially in type 2 diabetes. This was done at Yonsei University in Seoul, South Korea. It was a 12-week randomized double-blind placebo-controlled study involving subjects with impaired fasting glucose and impaired glucose tolerance, meaning they were type 2 diabetics. And they gave them 5 grams a day of Korean red ginseng. And at the end of 12 weeks, there was a significant improvement in how the glucose, meaning the blood sugar, was being maintained. So Korean red ginseng, if you're diabetic, it can make an enormous difference. Quote from the study, Korean red ginseng supplementation, 5 grams a day, may be beneficial for controlling serum and whole blood glucose levels compared to placebos among patients with diabetes, end quote. Now, you would think with 90 million Americans suffering from diabetes or pre-diabetic conditions that this would have been front page news. It wasn't. But we report it because it's a double-blind, placebo-controlled study at a major university published in a peer-reviewed journal. It's got everything it goes for it, except they're not advocating it. That's unfortunate. Curcumin. I've mentioned it every day for the past week. Why it's so important. Curcumin. This is from a major study done at the Institute of Immunology at a university in China. And here's what it says. Quote, curcumin holds potential in treatment autoimmune neuropathies. And think of the millions of people in the United States who have different neuropathies. And it turns off inflammation. And that what happens is inflammation goes into the cell and it accumulates. And it expresses interferon Y, tumor necrosis factor alpha, interleukin 1 beta, and interleukin 17, all of this ends up destroying the cell, altering your DNA, and then you get pain. This turns that off. Curcumin. Separately from the University of Windsor, the chemistry and biochemistry department, coenzyme Q10, a new study. There are many on Parkinson's disease. In the study, they found that the neurodegeneration, and which happens in people with Parkinson's, when they gave them high levels of coenzyme Q10, quote, coenzyme Q10 was found to be associated with significant neuroprotective effects, specifically when induced with neurodegeneration and neural death. And so if you've got Parkinson's, you have neurodegeneration and you have neuron death. And it's at a higher dose. I'm not going to tell you the dose because I'm concerned that sometimes people would take specific information without realizing it's to be applied. But I'll simply say that if you have Parkinson's or you know someone who has Parkinson's, there are several studies showing that 1,000 plus milligrams a day can make a difference. But you really need to be taking it at that level under the guidance of a clinician who knows the science, knows your biochemistry, but it can make major improvements. If you have psoriasis or vitiligo, prolonged vitamin D supplementation is beneficial. This is another study on biochemistry. This is from Brazil, and it says, quote, this study assessing the effect of prolonged administration of high-dose vitamin D on the clinical course of vitiligo and psoriasis, and it was positive and on these patients, and that's good. Also, want to lower your cholesterol? Guess which group in the United States, according to the latest research in a major study that was published in the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition, and, quote, the title of the article is Serum Concentrations of Cholesterol and a Apolipoprotein A1 and B, and they found out it was vegans. Quote, those who consume vegan diets have better cholesterol levels than people who eat meat, fish, dairy, and egg products. Researchers examined data and blood samples from 1,694 participants from the European Prospective Investigation into Cancer and Nutrition from Oxford study. Participants were categorized as meat eaters, fish eaters, vegetarians, and vegans. Those who ate a vegan diet consumed the most fiber, the least total fat, the least saturated fat, had the healthiest body weight, the healthiest cholesterols of all the diets. Now, there were previous studies that found that vegan and vegetarian groups had 32% lower risk of hospitalization or death from heart disease. That's good. So for those of you who've been shifting to a vegan diet, a healthy vegan diet, let me emphasize, you could sit around and eat, you know, white bread all day and call yourself a vegan, and that's not healthy, but you know what I'm talking about. That shows you're going to live a longer life. From the peer-reviewed journal Nutrition, dietary supplements part of a healthy lifestyle. And what they found is if you're taking dietary supplements, not just a one a day, but you're taking, you know, your antioxidants like vitamin C and vitamin E, you're more likely also not to be eating poorly, and you're more likely to be exercising because you're more concerned with overall health lifestyle than the majority. Quote, compiling the available data on the health habits of dietary supplement users, we gained a sharper insight into the positive lifestyle choices of this large segment, one half to two-thirds of the American population that takes supplements, end quote. And it shows that you're more likely than non-users to adopt positive, healthy lifestyle. You're not going to be smoking, you're not going to be as fat, all these other things. And that's something we've all noticed. And finally, baby boomers are looking at alternative arthritis treatments. This is from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Quote, as America turns increasingly gray, the aches and pains of osteoarthritis are increasingly a concern for baby boomers. An article in Medscape Rheumatology, part of the WebMD professional network, says more people are looking at complementary approaches for relief. Depending upon the severity of the condition, the usual approach to arthritis involves over-the-counter prescription medications. They can have very serious side effects. The article confirms there's a steady growth. Up to 50 million arthritis sufferers, and that's only going to grow higher. And they're looking at chiropractic medicine. That's good. Glucosamine sulfate and chondroitin sulfate. That also is good. They're looking, according to this article in the paper, at anti-inflammatory herbs, yoga, acupuncture, and diet. All that's good. Now, this is something that I'm acutely aware of because in the last 12 months and continuing, I have a documentary on this very topic on public television stations all across the country. In fact, I was just informed by one of the PBS special directors that it was the first, second, or third in all of PBS in the last 12 months. And in many cases, it was first and rated a 5+, and that's considered the highest rating they can give you for a show, and that's because the people responded to it. In fact, normally, and there's tough competition out there, you might have 5,000 different programs running on PBS. They generally take around 100 of those, about 50 end up getting showing. Of those, about 10 get shown repeatedly, and of those, only a few, a handful, are good enough to come back for the next session. The sessions are March, June, August, and December. So in effect, you could have a very short life because every morning they communicate with each other's station on their internet of what rated well, what pulled, what didn't pull. So they rate a show 0, it's terrible. 5, it's a monster blockbuster. And that way other programs can say, okay, we need a good hit, we'll bring it in. And we were the consistent 5 more than anything else out there. So on the subject of arthritis. But we added things that weren't just mentioned. Number one, what is the primary cause of arthritis? Inflammation. Where do we get it? In the food and beverages and in stress. That all causes inflammation. How do we stop this and how can we reverse it and how can we repair the damage? And then you go into alkalizing the body, repairing the DNA, turning off the process that creates massive free radical damage, scavenging the free radicals. How grazing is where you don't eat one big meal, but rather you graze through the day. You have small amount of food. Maybe take a handful of grapes. Maybe take a glass of fresh-made tomato juice, which is delicious, by the way. Get some organic tomatoes, throw them in a blender, throw a little lemon juice in, and some Himalayan sea salt, a little pinch of cayenne, a little bit of black pepper, a little bit of garlic. You got a great tasting juice. Well, that thins your blood. It helps give you antioxidant, gives you energy. It's digested in 10 minutes. You feel the benefit immediately. And suddenly you're not looking for a candy bar. You're not looking for something sweet to eat because your blood sugar's been brought up. You're okay. So that is what I'm recommending. One meal, primary meal a day. Start your day with a smoothie with all the good things in it that we talk about often here. And then lightly eat in the evening. But if you're grazing, you're never hungry. Never. You always have energy. And then it's easy to go to bed at night because your body's not overloaded with food it's trying to digest. Back in a moment to go into some of our other topics. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. This coming Monday, I will have an announcement to make concerning my future on WBAI for all of our listeners. I haven't said anything because I believe in respecting the people who say, would I hold off saying anything until there's an opportunity to correct the problems? And I said yes. And I've been told by Summer Reese that will be this weekend, so I'll discuss all this with you on Monday. And my only goal is to see that all of you are made whole for your support of that station in its hour of need, and what can be done to see that you get your premiums, period. So we'll give you that information on Monday. Still coming today, my guest, Stephen Kinzer, in about 10 minutes. I'm going to give a short commentary on Mr. President, My America is Now, Life in an RV Park with No Running Water and Not Much Heat, Paula Bray, from Eric Zeus, Why is Obama So Corrupt? And from the 10th Amendment Center, A Coalition Against the National Security Agency Spying. Also, why is the CDC and the FDA still recommending the failed whooping cough vaccines? And what about the government labeling those who want to grow their own food as extremists? Oh, yes. They have done that. So you see, we're taking on the issues as much as we can that are important to all of us. First, one real quick announcement. This is a good one. Never done this before, ever. And I want to thank Amila from our office for suggesting this. Today only, we are offering, or in the next 24 hours, we're offering only a case of greens and grains, the raw, all-natural, organic flaxseed and probiotics and sprouted grains and five different sea vegetables at 50% off. And I said, why do you want to do that? And Mila said, because we have people that go into these Costco and Sam's Club and Walmart, and they can buy cases of stuff. And generally in the health industry, you can't do that. And I said, fine. All right, we'll offer that to them today. A case, not a bottle. A case at 50% off. So this way you get the big savings. Now, what's in this? Well, first of all, you're getting no fat, no trans fat, no saturated fat, no cholesterol. You're getting fiber. You're getting protein. But here's what really makes this a superstar, the greens and grains. You're getting alfalfa, organic flaxseed, kamut, oak grass, pumpkin seeds, quinoa, all sprouts, spelt, amaranth, probiotics, yucca, ginger, chia seeds, ginseng, bromelain. You're getting four types of sea vegetables, fennel, probiotics. I think it's 6 or 8 billion probiotics, mixed carotenoids in this delicious cherry pineapple juice. All right? This is it. It's a powder, a sweetened by stevia. It's got the wonderful cherry pineapple flavor because it comes from natural cherry and pineapples. It's called Greens and Grains. I take it every single day. Now, I won't tell you why I take it. I've never made a claim ever for any product I've ever created. I believe that the audience is intelligent enough to know that they can go up and Google any single item and see for themselves why I would have this. Why would I put bromelain in? Google bromelain, B-R-O-M-E-L-A-I-N, and you'll see why. And what about all these sea vegetables that you never hear of, like alaria, A-L-A-R-I-A, or dulse, D-U-L-S-E, or laminaria, L-A-M-I-N-A-R-A-I-A. Bet you've never had any of these. But once I saw what they did, I wanted them in this product. And Panax ginseng, and pumpkin seeds, and oak grass, and kamut. There's a reason why I put all these together in the most delicious tasting large can, raw, living, powerful, and it's a case, 50% off. Let me give you the number to call. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Four. Case size. So we're going to give you what the big box stores would give you, but from a little tiny high-quality integrity company. A whole case, not a single jar, whole case. So this way you buy it once, you're saving 50%, and you got it for the next year. Okay? Greens and Grains. Spectacularly important for you. 877-627-5065. Now, let's go to a few issues before we go to the phones and my guest. This is from Paula Bray from the Huffington Post. Quote, "Dear Mr. President, I write to you today because I have nowhere else to turn. I lost my full-time job in September of 2012. I have only been able to find part-time employment, 16 hours each week at $12 an hour. But I don't work that every week. For the month of December, my net pay was $365. My husband and I now live in an RV at a campground because of my lost job. Our rent is $455, and that does not include utilities. We were given this 27-foot 1983 RV when I lost my job. This is America today. We have no running water. We use a hose to fill jugs. We have no shower, but the campground does. We have a toilet, but it only works when the sewer line doesn't freeze. If it freezes, we use the campground's restrooms. At night in bed, when it's cold out, my blanket can freeze to the wall of the RV. We don't have a stove or an oven, just a microwave. So regular food cooking is out. Recently, we found a small toaster oven on sale so we can bake a little now because eating only microwave foods just wasn't working for us. We don't have a refrigerator, and so it gets really cold. We use a picnic table. Unfortunately, we can't buy things in bulk because they'll go bad before we can use them. We can't buy dry goods either because there's no room to store them anywhere in this little tiny RV. We are very lucky that the campground has showers, but it costs 25 cents for 2 minutes. There have been times when we couldn't afford a shower and had to resort to bathing in the campground restroom sink. There was a shower in the RV, but the plumbing has deteriorated, so it doesn't work. The walls of the RV are not well insulated, so many times the inside gets wet from condensation. That means all the blankets that we have are stored above the bed end up moldy. And there's mold under the carpet and on the floor, and there's mold along the walls behind our seats. But we keep it clean the best we can. The heating system in the RV no longer functions. We have a small radiator-type floor heater, and we move it around to dry the floor to keep it from molding. My husband is bipolar, and was considered disabled and was receiving Social Security prior to my job loss. He was seen for 10 minutes by a disability physician, never asked about his bipolar condition, and was kicked off disability. After I lost my job at a college, we moved from Kern County in California, where the unemployment rate is over 10%, to the Pacific Northwest, where the unemployment rate is lower, and I still can't find work. So now we sit. I apply for so many jobs daily. I have a master's degree, and I've been in the workforce for 30 years. Why can't I find a job? I have marketing skills. I have remarkable skills. My credit card is not worth anything. My credit score is 570, and I'm no longer being considered for jobs in the real world. I'm only ever considered for government job, and even then, they usually know who they plan to hire, and it goes somewhere else. I've been receiving unemployment benefits from California, but now the unemployment rate for the state is lower. There's no more funds coming in. My husband can't find a job. Nobody wants to hire me. Luckily, the state of Washington has decided to provide us with $300 in food stamps each month, but it still isn't enough to survive on. All of our savings are gone. I no longer have any retirement savings, nothing. By the end of this month, we will be without anything or anywhere to turn. Your devoted constituent, Paula Bray. So, in my travels across this country, we now have over 1,000 interviews of individuals who have advanced degrees, had worked diligently, had worked hard, and are now, like Paula, suffering. And yet the banker's not suffering, the energy cartels, the farming cartels, Wall Street, the pharmaceutical cartels, no one else seems to be suffering. But a lot of Americans are, and there's absolutely nothing being done to help them. From Eric Zeus, from Op-Ed News, a short commentary, but I thought something that we should listen to his perspective. See what you think. Why is Obama so corrupt? Syracuse University Track Reports, which is the only organization that tabulates the federal government's prosecutions of elite financial crimes, headlined Slump in FBI White-Collar Crime Prosecutions, and reports, quote, the prosecutions of white-collar criminals recommended by the FBI are substantially down during the first 10 months of 2013. This was especially so in the Wall Street area. Quote, in the last year, the Judicial District Court recorded the largest projected drop in the rate of white-collar crime prosecutions, down 27%, with the Southern District of New York, Manhattan. Thus, President Obama has kept the promise that he made in secret to the assembled Wall Street CEOs inside the White House on March 27, 2009. It was later leaked out. Quote, Obama said, my administration is the only thing between you and the pitchforks. End quote. Obama was promising to protect them from the pitchforks. Our president was saying he'd protect these men from such a mob that so that they can get away with their crimes. He saw these billionaires and sent of millionaires as being the victims whom he would protect from the irrational mass of people, today's American public. And so there it is. So who are the people they're going after? They're not going after the rich and powerful. They're not going after Wall Street. They're not going after the people that created the problems, but they are going after regular people. How do we know that? Well, this is just the latest. This is from Christina Sarich. Quote, government labels those who grow their own food extremist. Those who mean to be over us, the Department of Defense, have now called people who grow their own food radical extremists. Sound familiar? Well, that's what it's come down to. And this was based upon Judicial Watch, a Freedom of Information Act request, included in a 133 documents provided by the Air Force to teach our military to root out extremism. In a student guide, those who would decide to grow some organic cabbage and non-GMO corn and tomatoes, for example, would be considered a threat to national defense. Even though the document says this is folk for training purposes only, and then it goes on to talk about if you grow your own food, the government now considers you a threat. Okay. And finally, from our public health segment, Last year was the year the CDC and the FDA finally admitted there were problems with the pertussis whooping cough vaccine. When cases of whooping cough spiked the year before, the media and medical community was quick to rush in and blame unvaccinated children. However, when you look at the data, it was not the unvaccinated children that were coming down with the whooping cough. It was the vaccinated children. Two major research papers published documenting the failure of the pertussis vaccine. And one was published last year, one this year. And it went on to talk at length about what was wrong with these vaccines. Unfortunately, in spite of the actual science that shows that these vaccines do not work, they're still advocated. So be aware of that. They're telling you to get a vaccine, and that vaccine doesn't work. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us. Before we go to our guest in about 10 minutes, I want to spend a little bit of time with your talkback segment, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And we're going to go over in a second and take our first call. Don't believe everything you read about the flu vax. From Lawrence Solomon, quote, flu results, quote, in about 250,000 to 500,000 yearly deaths worldwide. The typical estimate is 36,000 deaths in the United States. Reports NBC citing the CDC, quote, somewhere between 4,000 and 8,000 Canadians die each other of influenza. And then he goes on to talk about, according to the National Vital Statistics System in the United States, annual flu deaths were 500 per year. Let me repeat that. 500 per year, not 36,000. We have more people dying of ulcers, 2,977. Hernias, 1,832. We have all these other. And then, of course, you get up to heart disease, it's almost 600,000, cancer almost 600,000. So why is it we've been lied to? Even that figure 500 for the U.S. could be high. According to analysis in authoritative journals such as the American Journal of Public Health and the British Medical Journal, only about 15 to 20% of the people come down with flu-like symptoms have the influenza virus. The other 80 to 85% actually have rhinovirus and other germs that are indistinguishable from the true flu without laboratory tests, which are rarely done. In fact, in 1 year, deaths that were certified from the flu were 257. That's it, 257. But only 18 of those 257 were positively identified. So we didn't have 36,000, we had 18. And that's the truth of it. So remember that when you go to get a flawed, fraudulent, toxic, and deadly flu vaccine, especially if you're pregnant. They don't have any of the statistics on their side. We've exposed them. We've shown that they are lying. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take your calls now. And our first caller up is Luann. Hi, Luann.
Hi, Gary.
Speak up, Luann.
Oh, okay, here I am.
Hang on.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
There you go. I have someone here who sent me an email who apparently must have been on an airplane flight with you, and he says, I want to apologize for not respecting civil protocol as a professional. He says, I certainly wouldn't want someone spending an entire flight asking questions of me. He says, I did that to you. He says, when I saw who you were, I changed seats to sit near you. I had never done anything like this in my life, but please hear me out. He said, since that flight, I have spent 4 hours a day reviewing the scientific literature on the subject of AIDS, and now I am now fully convinced that I and everyone else in my field has been living with half-truths and full lies about this disease. We've been completely manipulated by the medical-industrial AIDS movement. I've already begun to share the information I uncovered with colleagues who were also very dismissive, and now they're questioning the whole foundation of their belief system. He says, I'll continue to share this information, and I intend to become one of their dissidents. All I can say is it must be very lonely being on the right side of history, the right side of truth, and the wrong side of power. You get none of the credit and all the blame, and yet you have the truth. So his question is, What are some of the other truths out there that people are not aware of?
Oh, my goodness, there's so many. Let's just, for example, take women's health. Right now, approximately 10 million American women are taking synthetic hormone replacement therapy to help alleviate hot flashes and to prevent osteoporosis. And indeed, that will help those two conditions. But women have been also given the assurance that this therapy is safe. It is not. All the science shows that you can increase the risk of heart attack, stroke, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, colorectal cancer, and dementia by a minimum of 13%. So do the math. If they're saying minimally you're going to injure or cause these incidents, then 1.3 million American women are at risk every year. That's an awful lot of people to put at risk. When if you looked at Black Cohosh, Vitex, and Don Quai, getting off of refined carbohydrates, simple sugars, changing your diet, exercising, you could turn off the hot flashes, as you've seen because you were one of the nurse supervisors of a one-year clinical study with 287 women that proved that conclusively, because everyone took their blood chemistry, medical exams before, during, and after the 12 months, that we were able to reverse hot flashes and night sweats and osteoporosis in over 95% of the individuals with just lifestyle modification. So people got healthier and didn't put them at risk. And yet that information on the medical paradigm is still prevalent today. That's just one example. A separate example, that the American diet is fine, just eat everything in moderation. Well, what is a moderate amount of lead, cadmium, mercury, aluminum, cobalt? What does it do in the body? What is a moderate amount of radiation? Should we be concerned when we're told on a routine basis that we have to have medical tests for defensive medical reasons because maybe the doctor will miss something and instead of doing it right, they do excess, in which case we put ourselves at risk? There is no such thing as a moderate amount of radiation. I interviewed extensively America's greatest radiologist scientist, Dr. John Goffman. He was one of the discoverers of plutonium. And he said, there is no such thing as a safe dose of radiation. Any radiation is toxic. So over the Middle East, in Iraq, Afghanistan, in Bosnia, in Somalia, we have spread depleted uranium. Has there been any acknowledgement of the dangers? None. How do we know it's bad? Well, Dr. Doug Rocky, who was sent over by the Pentagon to determine the extent of the depleted uranium, came back and wrote a devastating report about how dangerous it is. They covered up that report. Now, we have, from the documentary I did in on our Gulf War vets and on the civilians in Iraq, we had doctors giving thousands of photographs of deformed or dead babies saying, we've never had this in the country's history. We might see one case a year. Now we're seeing hundreds per month. So terrified are parents of having children, they're choosing not to have children because the effects of depleted uranium in the environment, in our water, our air, and other toxins, causing these high levels of mortality. Any admission by any embedded journalist in the United States? No, there has not been. Has there been any story on Fox, MSNBC, NBC, showing you the actual life of an average citizen in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and the consequences of our actions there? I'm not talking about insurgents. I'm not talking about anyone who's fighting. I'm just talking about citizens. Remember last year there was a documentary I watched. And in one scene, you can see a father with five children. And you notice that three of the children had no shoes. You also notice that there was snow in the background. And they were standing in puddles of water. And a postscript to the film was that all those kids died. Not from shells, but from the inclement weather. Poverty. But we spend billions of dollars. Where's the story on the billions of dollars? Hundreds of billions that goes to graft. And how does that help the average person? It doesn't. So we don't tell that story. So we're very select in the stories we tell. Last year and for the last 20 straight years, the number one cause of death and injury in all of America was American medicine. Now, these are their statistics. We simply compiled a group of five scholars, medical doctors, board-certified and professors and myself, we compiled their studies from the American Medical Association and the American Heart Association and all the others, and the American College of Rheumatology, American College of Radiology, American College of Oncology, American College of Surgeons and Physicians. We used their statistics, and we showed that American medicine, was killing about 700,000 to 1 million people per year. Not a single person could challenge it, and yet not a single meeting was held to change it. So, what part of that story is the American media terrified to tell? So no one tells any story, no committee hearings on Washington, nothing to change the system. So when you have a system that's so broken that within 20 years they have killed over 10 million Americans and no one's willing to talk about it, to discuss it, to see how you can change it, we are a society of avoiders and deniers. And that's unfortunate, because what can you change if you're not willing to be honest about the truth?
Well, besides that, Gary, they scare the heck out of you if you don't comply with their protocols. I've had people with cancer where physicians have written letters to them explaining that they will not be held responsible for the extremely painful and untimely death that they will ultimately suffer if they don't have this therapy. I mean, I think that's just criminal.
You've been an oncological nurse for 36 years, correct?
Correct.
You've been in the operating room. You've helped run and administer the nursing section of whole hospitals with over 100 nurses under your supervision, correct?
Correct.
Then in an upcoming program, we will have you tell about what you've seen firsthand, not hearsay, and what was done when you tried to change it or intervene in the process, the responsibility of both the nurses, the dietitians, and the physicians, what goes on behind the scenes. And also maybe at that time you can answer this question. This is for tomorrow's show. Mm-hmm. Why are American hospitals charging $800 for a 44-cent bag of salt water?
Profit.
That's right. Could you imagine what they charge now for a simple appendectomy? $55,000. Very simple procedure. $55,000. Why? Profit. We'll talk on that at length on an upcoming program, Luann.
Okay.
Thank you. I see my guest is on hold. Let's go over and say hello to Stephen Kinzer. I gave you his background earlier in the program about his working as the Times bureau chief in Berlin following the collapse of the Soviet Union and in Istanbul. He is a fierce opponent of U.S. foreign policy, U.S. interventionism, and he's certainly not going to have a positive conversation with Judith Miller of the New York Times. She was probably the single most significant journalist in the United States of putting in stories to encourage us to get into the war in Iraq. She has never apologized that I'm aware of for that. Steve is also the author of 9 books, including his latest, The Brothers, John Foster and Alan Dulles, and Their Secret World War, which takes an in-depth look at how the former head of the CIA and the Secretary of State has shaped American foreign policy as divine-mandated exceptionalism that contributes to and haunts us today. His website is Stephen, Stephen, Kinzer, Kinzer.com. Nice to have you this day.
Good to be with you.
I'd like to conduct this interview in the context of the legacy of the Dulles brothers that continues to shape American foreign policy ideologies and our cultural perceptions and illusions about ourselves as the best nation in the world with a mandate to spread democracy and freedom around the world. And one of the large criticisms today is how the revolving door between Washington, Wall Street, and corporate America has shaped our domestic policies as well. So begin by sharing with us how the Dulles brothers, who went on to define the mission of the CIA and the State Department during the Eisenhower years, actually were bred in Wall Street, and then their transition from the finance industry into government and foreign relations that they had no credible experience to assume.
I don't know how many hours we have. That's a wonderful beginning for a conversation. So just to set the background, John Foster Dulles, of course, was Secretary of State during the 1950s, and his brother Alan was director of the CIA during the same period. This was the only time in history that siblings, brothers, controlled the overt and the covert sides of American foreign policy. And the roots of many of the world crises that have shaken us since then, everywhere from Vietnam to Iran to Cuba, can be traced back to the Dulles brothers. They grew up in a family where they were inculcated with the idea of American exceptionalism, and they were also inculcated with the ideology of missionary Calvinism, which tells you that the world is divided into the good and the evil, and that the good have to go out and crush the evil. But another big factor that shaped them is the one that you mentioned, and that is corporate power. So the Dulles brothers spent decades working for this remarkable Wall Street law firm, Sullivan and Cromwell. And that law firm had a specialty. The specialty was pushing around small countries to get them to do what big American corporations wanted them to do. They were so successful at doing this that virtually every major American multinational corporation retained Sullivan and Cromwell to represent them abroad. In other words, to make sure that foreign countries did what they wanted. Just to give a small example, when John Foster Dulles was just a young associate at the firm in 1917, there was an election in Cuba. The liberals defeated the incumbent conservatives, but the conservatives refused to give up office. The liberals wanted to place limits on the amount of land that foreigners could own in Cuba. So this panicked the big sugar companies that had investments there, and they went to Sullivan and Cromwell, which was their lawyer, and said, you got to fix this situation for us. The liberals at that time were in rebellion, trying to get the conservatives to recognize the result of the election. So Foster Dulles got the case. He got on the train. He went to Washington to meet the Secretary of State, who happened to be his uncle. And then the uncle said to him, what do you think we should do? And he said, we should send two boatloads of Marines to Cuba to put down that rebellion. The next day, the United States sent two warships to Cuba. 6,000 Marines debarked. They crushed the liberal revolt, and everything was fine for the sugar companies that had hired Sullivan and Cromwell. Of course, that helped lay the seeds for tremendous upheaval and anti-Americanism in Cuba years later, which we profess to be shocked by. Now, when the Dulles brothers were private attorneys, at the very end of their career, before they went into government, this would have been in the early 1950s, they suffered two most unaccustomed and most unwelcome setbacks, defeats. The first one came in Iran, where a democratic government had emerged under Prime Minister Mossadegh, and that government and parliament voted to nationalize the Iranian oil industry. That industry was owned by one British company, and the bank for that company was something called the Schroeder Bank, which was a major client of Sullivan and Cromwell. And in fact, Alan Dulles was on the board of Schroeder Bank. So he had to go back to his people at Schroeder Bank and essentially say, we failed you. You hired us to protect your interests in Iran, but out of our control, a democratic government emerged, and now you've lost your interests there. Immediately after that, they faced the same problem in Guatemala. A democratic government had emerged that passed a land reform law. This law affected the interests of United Fruit Company, and there wasn't anything the Dulles brothers could do about it. But when they came into office at the beginning of 1953, they immediately went after these two guys. They hadn't even waited to be inaugurated before they started plotting against Mossadegh in Iran, and he was gone by August of that year. And immediately after overthrowing him, they began the plot against President Arbenz in Guatemala, and he was overthrown the following June. So they carried the grudges against these two democratically elected leaders with them from their years as private lawyers into public office. It really is a sterling example of how private corporate interests decisively shaped America's approach to the world during the 1950s. So much of the pattern that was set then still helps determine our foreign policy today.
Very Manichean. Today, almost everywhere that the U.S. has intervened in foreign countries that you were mentioning, whether to support the tyrannical leaders or despotic individuals, to displace governments, such as we have done recently in Afghanistan and Iraq, we've witnessed blowback and greater chaos in the aftermath. Was this not also the track record of the Dulles brothers? Share with us just a little bit more, please, on the dismal record of American CIA and military interventionism. For example, the Vietnam, the Congo, Berlin, China, Tibet, Egypt, Syria, Cuba, you just mentioned, and why were they so unsuccessful in achieving the results they had hoped for?
One of the Dulles brothers' great failures of imagination, and I think this also applies to Eisenhower, is that they had no concept of what we call today blowback. It never occurred to them that these foreign interventions can have terrible effects years or decades or even generations later. They never imagined that by intervening in Iran and placing the Shah back in power, they would be setting off a scale that would lead us off to dictatorship, a revolution, bitterly anti-American government. They never understood or thought or cared about the possibility that Guatemala would fall into this horrific civil war in which hundreds of thousands were killed. Vietnam is another great example. John Foster Dulles was the main American figure responsible for U.S. involvement in Vietnam. And the story is that he attended the Geneva Conference of 1954 to determine the future of Indochina. And when he got there, it became clear to him after a few days that all the other world powers and the Asian powers had agreed that since Ho Chi Minh had won a great victory on the ground, he had won the right to a slice of Indochina. As soon as Dulles realized that this is what the conference was going to do, was going to allow, he walked out. It's the only time in history that a Secretary of State has left a major international conference in the middle. So he came home and he told his brother Alan, the head of the CIA, to start a major operation against Ho Chi Minh. If that one guy, John Foster Dulles, had not made that one decision on that one day when he flew home from Geneva, we might have avoided the entire American involvement in Vietnam. But it was this sense that America was infallible and that our operations always succeeded that drove them. I think one reason for that is they came from a social class where there never was such a thing as a setback or a catastrophic reversal. Everything went well for those people and their friends in their lives. So they assumed that when they wanted to do something in the world, it would always come out well. Today's world is testimony to how wrong they were.
I appreciate that insight. I'll bet most of the people in this audience did not know that it was one man walking out of that meeting that really caused the Vietnam War. And he could have only done that had his brother, who was the head of the CIA, been there to intervene. And McNamara and Henry Cabot Lodge and all the other cast of characters, Harriman, that were all associated with that, they were secondary to that. So he was the progenitor of that. Final question. Eisenhower warned the American people of the power of the industrial military complex. And this warning holds as much true today as it did in the 50s and 60s. How much of this warning was directed at the Dulles? And if we were to learn from the mistakes of history, what does the Dulles legacy tell us?
First of all, I think Eisenhower's warning about the military-industrial complex disguised another piece of his approach to the world, and that was he was a strong supporter of covert action and clandestine operations. He saw that as a kind of a peace project. His idea was you won't need the military-industrial complex and these giant weapons establishments if you have covert operations in which the CIA can overthrow regimes. He didn't say that publicly, but really that was a big part of it. Now, you ask about the legacy of the Dulles brothers. One thing I really discovered when I was writing this book is that the Dulles brothers, who were so hugely powerful in the 1950s that there probably wasn't even a literate human being on Earth who didn't know their name, have now been almost completely forgotten. We've airbrushed them out of our history. I think the reason might be that their approach to the world did not work out well for us. And rather than confront that fact and see if there are lessons that we can draw from their historic mistakes, it's easier just to pretend they never existed.
Well, you've done a magnificent job, and I commend you, Stephen, for giving us these insights on how today, when we look at all the cast of characters who run the National Security Agency, Homeland Security, the President's National Security Advisor, the Condoleezza Rice, the Brzezinski, all these people, they all were given a platform and, in effect, encouragement by the Dulles brothers. So we thank you for giving us this part of history that is necessary in context to understand why we are so dysfunctional today in our foreign policy.
And thanks for giving me and people like me a great forum on your show.
All the best. And the website is Stephen, S-T-P-H-E-N, Kinzer, K-I-N-Z-E-R.com. The book is The Brothers, John Foster Dulles, Alan Dulles, and the Secret World of War. By the way, just Stephen is a veteran correspondent with the New York Times. He has reported from 50 countries, including in the 1980s, social upheavals in Central America. He currently teaches journalism and foreign policy at Boston University, and he was the Times bureau chief in Berlin following the collapse of the Soviet Union. And I want to thank you all for taking your time today to tune in and listen. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone. Let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Really interesting program today. We are discussing the indictment of six of the company's officers at the company called Investigative Resource Planning Solutions in Colorado City and how the indictment came to be.
Excellent. We look forward to that. Tomorrow, by the way, Utrice, I'm going to do a special commentary on the corporate welfare, bankrupting U.S. cities, destroying pensions and jobs and city services. And I'm starting with what you and you alone in journalism right now have focused on, and that is bankrupt the city of Detroit and all that you can gain from it. And so we're going to talk in depth about that. So you might want to tune a little early tomorrow, hear the commentary.
Thank you.
And it's Utrice Lead, who has done more on the people who are the vulture capitalists taking advantage of the situation in Detroit than anyone else in the media. So go to her archives at the Progressive Radio Network and look at the good story she has done. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Now stay tuned for Utrice Lead.